Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to EMS Live. This program is recorded.
Welcome to EMS Live in Wisconsin. Today is Wednesday, February 28, 2017. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. It's great to have you with us. Thank you for tuning in to today's program. Patrick Ryan and Chris Anderson are with me this morning. Good morning, fellas, and welcome to another broadcast.
Morning, Joe.
Good morning, Joe, and it's great to be here.
Great to have you with us, and we've got a great, great discussion headed everybody's way today. We have Jerry Biggert, who is chair of the Wisconsin EMS Advisory Board. Also, Dana Seckler, who's a committee member and very involved with the recent legislative study committee on volunteer EMT and firefighter shortages. We'll look forward to the discussion here very momentarily with both of them. And then, Patrick, you're going to join, of course, through the discussion, but we're also going to talk about community paramedicine. What are some tidbits that we'll be chatting about with that, just to give people a little teaser here to stay with us?
Sure, Joe, thanks. We'll give an update about where we're at in the process. It's moving along quite well. We're kind of at the final stages of getting something introduced, so we'll talk a little bit about that and kind of talk about what the near future holds.
Very exciting time for EMS, and we'll hear from Jerry here quite shortly as far as the longevity of getting it to this point. It's been a number of years, and it's nice to see some of these things starting to happen. Let's see. The program today is going to run about 30 minutes. It's sponsored by AlladTech. And very shortly, we'll be chatting with Jerry and Dana. Let me give you a little tee up to this. The Wisconsin EMS Advisory Board is a group of governor-appointed representatives for the EMS industry. The group selects members of the Physicians Advisory Committee, quite often referred to as PAC, as well as advises the Wisconsin EMS section on matters of EMS policy, procedure, and really serves as a sounding board to state government. We'll be joined shortly here by Jerry and Dana. And in addition, Patrick, as we mentioned, is going to talk about community paramedicine, something that's very, very important, a big deal. And it's a very important thing for providers looking to offer or currently offering these services, especially from a licensing, training, and the ability to bill Medicare services for the services they're providing. This is EMS Live in Wisconsin. Thanks for being with us. Our program continues after these brief messages.
Hi, this is Joe Cavelli. For nearly 10 years, I used AlladTech scheduling tool for my EMT shifts. Having had this personal experience, I'd like to share how easy it was to submit my work availability to management and be assigned shifts. It was also easy to pick up open shifts or trade with others. I could even view my work schedule for the month, week, or day and know who else I was working with well ahead of that first 911 call. Best of all, I could access my schedule and all the great features offered by AlladTech right on my smartphone, tablet, or computer. Are you using the grease board or paper handouts yet for your work schedules? If so, that is a thing of the past. You'll discover, too, that AlladTech is more than just a scheduling tool. It offers many other great features as well. To learn more about AlladTech's features or to sign up for a free trial version, visit AlladTech.com. That's A-L-A-D-T-E-C.com. Online employee scheduling and workforce management is much easier, faster, and better with AlladTech.
Frustrated with EMS equipment breakdowns? Is equipment sitting on the shelf waiting to get repaired only to be left with an unreliable backup, having to chase down or wait for a repair technician? If so, there's a simple fix. Cardiotronics is a single-source service maintenance provider dedicated to EMS equipment. They service several Wisconsin customers already. Besides repairing your equipment, they'll create a formalized maintenance program. They have three main objectives: reduce costs, improve reliability of your equipment, and minimize service events. Contact Craig Harmon at Cardiotronics today at 855-433-3427 or find them on the web at cardiotronicshealth.com. Make Cardiotronics your next service call.
EMS Live in Wisconsin is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. To speak with the co-hosts or guests during the live show, dial 646-929-1081 and press number 1 on your keypad, or send an email to emslive@paaw.us. And now, back to the program.
Welcome back to EMS Live in Wisconsin. This is Joe Cavelli, joined by Patrick Ryan and Chris Anderson. Also like to welcome to the broadcast Dana Seckler and Jerry Bigger. Gentlemen, and welcome to the program. Thank you very much for sharing your time with us.
Good morning,
Our
Joe.
Our pleasure.
Great to have you with us, and I know we want to cover several things, so we'll hop right into it. We've got about 25 minutes with the broadcast yet. And, Jerry, I know you've got a lot of things going on with the EMS Advisor Board. How long have you been the chairman, by the way? I know it's been a number of years, but how long has it been?
That is a good question. I think it's got to be going on 6 years, perhaps. I've been on the board longer, but I don't want to shorten previous Chair Hazy's time. I think it's going on about 6 years, though.
All right. Well, thank you very much for your service and leadership with the board. I know there's quite a few things going on with the board, especially legislatively, also at the state capitol, a lot of things to manage and be aware of. Jerry, can you offer some highlights as to what's currently being done at the board level as far as action items?
Yeah, absolutely. So we did change the format of the meeting. We have one long board meeting now. It used to be the first day would be a bunch of committee meetings, and the second day would be kind of recapping and having the actual action taken. There's just too much going on. We decided to make the whole thing both days a board meeting, start to finish, action taken both days, and we still are struggling to get through the agenda. So it's lots going on, like you said. So we have two new members, Don Kimlicka, Dustin Ridings. They joined their first meeting last month. We also, EMS office put on a new way to attend through, I believe it's Skype. All of it's right online. It's super easy to get onto. It's 10 times better than the previous system, and it's working great. So we're hoping to have more people attend, even if it's just playing in the background. The agenda's online. You can kind of figure out when a topic that might be interesting to you would show up. As far as some of the things that we're really working hard on, is NEMSIS 3.3.4. And, you know, we do have that kind of drop-dead date for compliance in June. And, you know, if there's going to be any struggles with that, now's the time to start reaching out to the EMS office looking for some help and guidance. They're very willing to do that. And it's just getting it on people's radar and making sure people are working on this this update. I'll get through some of these kind of quick, and then you just stop me if you want to talk about them in any greater detail. we're working to try to figure out what EMS's role is in the opiate and narcotic epidemic. We do, review the governor's task force on that same issue, and we're just trying to figure out how community EMS and, things that might fall within current scope would work with respect to us doing our part in trying to take care of this and looking at grants, trying to team up with, local or county public health and just trying to figure out what we can do for these issues. We did hear from the EMS office. We talked a lot about the legislative council study, and I'm just going to table that until we can bring Dana in a little easier. As far as operational plans go, we really want to encourage the services to make sure that their operational plans are updated. You get a new ambulance, you change your significant exposure people, your medical director especially. It's super important that we get the plans updated so that communication is going to the right people and that if something happens and the plan gets reviewed, they're not finding a bunch of other issues that didn't get updated. So it's real important for communication purposes and accountability that those get updated. And I know we change service directors frequently, and that's probably one of the biggest things that needs to be looked at and make sure that they also take their service director course. The state EMS office has broken the state up into EMS regional coordinators, and that information is also on the website. So instead of having multiple people to contact, there's one contact for every service in the state that directors can reach out to, and that should help expedite protocol updates and any other services needed by the EMS office. So, I mean, again, another move that should really streamline and help out the services a lot. I can't say enough for the amount of time and effort that the Wisconsin EMS office is putting into issues that have been on the table for quite some time. And they're just doing a great job. As far as the committee appointments, we're going to be asking at the April meeting that the committee applications open up so that we can appoint committee members in June. So if you're interested in any aspect of EMS, there is a committee assigned to that through the EMS board, and that will open up, as well as if there's any medical directors and physicians that are interested in being on PAC, that would be also the time to apply for that. And especially any pediatric physicians. I know PAC is always looking for a PEDS representative. Some of the other things that we're looking at, bear with me just one moment. We are just going to run down the list for you, Joe. We are putting Dana in charge of looking at Medicaid reimbursement and the ground EMT Medicaid dollars. Again, this is one of those things that with the new president, we're not quite sure how block grants are going to work and money coming back to the state in Medicaid versus being held at the federal government. Bottom line, if we can get this, if this stays status quo and we can get this legislation moved through or an agent to at least take on the money, we could bring millions back to the state of Wisconsin. It's a program that's already in place in other states like California. Somehow this has been there for a while, and it just wasn't realized, I guess. And, you know, Dana can speak more on that. We are really encouraging services to take a look at pre-arrival instructions and not to get so overwhelmed by them, but to look at the pre-arrival instructions that have time-critical interventions in them, like compression-only CPR and bleeding control, and to try to work with their dispatch agencies to get those implemented. Obviously, that is going to play big in our ability to, as EMS providers, to have a viable patient and to have good outcomes. And, you know, obviously there are a lot of police-operated dispatch centers, but I think if we pare it down to just a few, and the fact that those things can be created locally, there's already tons of online free options available, like through Milwaukee County EMS, that they could implement just a couple that would make such a huge difference, and hopefully realize that the liability in not giving pre-arrival instructions, not in giving pre-arrival instructions. We are taking a look at a couple different things, such as special events, operational plans. We're looking at how to handle better mass casualty incidents and patient tracking, where we can hopefully follow a patient from the incident to discharge and get much better data back to EMS agencies. So we're working with the healthcare coalitions on how we can facilitate that through different kinds of tracking software and making sure that we have triage that is compliant with MUCC, M-U-C-C, I believe, which very few are, and SALT is one of the few that is. So just making, you know, when we have a major incident that cross county lines and jurisdictional lines, we need to make sure that everybody is using the same triage. Otherwise, this isn't going to work. So we're very interested in how we can hopefully come up with a reasonable plan and maybe find some funding for a system that everybody could take part in, and maybe even use on day-to-day operations, so that when a major event happens, they already have it weaved into their operations, and it's not a big deal to break out triage tags. We are looking at, let's see here, obviously community EMS, mobile integrated healthcare, which you're going to talk more about, so I'm not going to waste any of this valuable time on that. Let's see. It's getting close. The Physicians Advisory Committee met and continues to meet, trying to take the things that they learn at NAEMSP and NASEMSO and try to make sure that what we're doing makes sense and matches the latest evidence and data. We do meet jointly with EMS for Children, and they have their own board, and then we join them for an hour-long meeting and go through things that are specific to pediatric EMS. It's great. There's co-chairs, Dr. Kim and Dr. Brown, and they bring valuable experts in pediatric medicine to the EMS board meetings so that we can make sure, again, that what we're doing makes sense. And the vice chair, Mark Fredrickson, he takes care of all of our STAC and RTAC stuff. So we have a joint meeting with STAC again in June. So if you're interested in the trauma aspect of things, after the board meeting on the Wednesday in June that we meet, then we go right over to and meet with them. And that's what we're talking about, some of these healthcare coalition initiatives like patient tracking and triage. And I think other than the other things I know we're going to talk about, that's about a summary of what our current items are.
It's quite a few things, Jerry. Thank you for the highlight on each one of those. And if somebody does have or require additional information, all the meeting minutes are posted on the State of Wisconsin EMS website. So people can refer to recent board action or history of action there, I would presume.
Yeah, absolutely. We try to keep that as updated. I mean, everything's posted ahead of time. And I guess there's one other thing that I don't even know that it's necessarily out there yet, but we're very sensitive to the issues that the training centers face and the services and how things move back and forth with the training centers. So we're going to be asking in June that the chair and vice chair of the training centers group join our training and education group, and they have seats that are just reserved for them so that we're making sure that we're hearing everything going on with the training centers as well.
That's a great idea, Jerry. Let's bring Dana Seckler in too now, because I know you mentioned Dana's going to be doing some work and heading up a committee dedicated to Medicaid dollars. Dana, I know you were recently at the American Ambulance Association conference, their national conference, and they brought up this as one of their talking points and presentation topics. What are some things that you can initially share about this? I'm sure people haven't heard about some of these new initiatives that you're going to be working on.
Thanks, Joe. The American Ambulance Association did set up a task force committee that's working on Medicare, Medicaid reform. And within that, they're going to be discussing just a lot of the issues that all ambulance services have in the billing and the payment structure, the fee structure, and so on and so forth. Medicaid, there's been two studies on Medicare. There's been two studies at the federal level. And both studies have said that the money that we get in from Medicare payments don't pay the bills. They actually pay less than what we should be getting paid for the cost of the call. In addition to that, Medicaid even pays less money than what Medicare does. So they've acknowledged that both systems are not paying the bills as they indeed should be paying. So we're going to be working on that. Now, if you look within the state of Wisconsin, if you remember in previous talks, we've discussed the fact that Medicaid has not had an increase in revenue payments since 2008. And when they did have an increase in the payment in 2008, it was only 1%. So if you're doing a BLS run that's emergent, no matter what you bill, whether you bill $100, $1,000, or $1 million, you're only going to get a reimbursement of $94.90. And that does not pay the cost of the transport. So we're looking at that, and we're looking at options that we can try to increase some of those base rates and or increase some of the mileage that's associated with that. Now, a totally new concept has come up that I was just made aware of at the meeting in November, did a bunch of phone calling around and checking, and most people had not heard about it yet. So that's when I got a hold of both Jerry and then Patrick to discuss this. And what it is a ground emergency medical transportation reimbursement. And I know it's a mouthful, but basically what it says is if you can determine your costs for each individual ambulance service, well, whether it's statewide or individual, you determine what that is, you subtract what your reimbursement rate was. So let me give you an example. You get paid $94 for a BLS run. But if it costs you $1,500 to make that run, you would take the $1,500 minus the, let's just round the numbers up to 100. So minus the $100 for the reimbursement, you get $1,400 that you could potentially would be eligible for. So you keep track of those numbers for a calendar year. Then you would submit them to the state, who would then submit them to the federal government. There is a provision that says there has to be an in-kind service, and basically what most entities have stated is we'll just take that as the ambulance service itself providing the transfer or the trip or the emergency call. We'll just absorb that cost, and what it basically equals is 50% of the call. So, again, we have the $1,400 potential reimbursement. We're going to take a cut of 50%, so that $1,400 becomes $700. So at the end of the day, if we are able to get this legislation passed, you would then be able to claim an additional $700 for every Medicaid trip that you take. So you multiply that out, and they've done it in the state of California. The state of California is the one and only state that has actually passed this legislation to be able to make this work. They're bringing in millions and millions of dollars for their ambulance services, which are mostly fire-based, in which they are able to bring in reimbursement rates that help with this gap. Minnesota has also done this a little differently. There's two services in Minnesota. I think it's Hennepin County EMS and St. Paul Fire Department. They decided to do it individually. They are keeping track of the runs. They're claiming it through the federal government, and they're getting reimbursements back as well. They've been very successful with it, so much that Minnesota is going to be passing or attempting to pass a legislative initiative that will allow the rest of the services to get this benefit as well. So we presented this to the EMS Advisory Board. They were very interested in it. We're still doing discussions. Hopefully in this next month in March, I'll be meeting with a couple of the officials from DHS. It has already kind of been run up the flagpole, so to speak, at DHS. And for the most part, there seems to be support to see what they can do to help us out. Of course, we have to go through all the proper channels. At the end of the day, it's going to probably require some type of legislation, and that helps to make everything run smooth and make it equal for everybody, and it legitimizes it. And so we're going to be looking at those options in the next month. Jerry did bring up an issue as far as what happens with changes as far as bringing in some the block grant funding again, which I think was from years ago. That is a potential that could change it, though we're still looking to see what the actual source is of this reimbursement money, which would be actually federal dollars, not state dollars. We'll just see if we can find the source and how it will or will not be affected based on the block grants that are coming up. So at the end, we're doing a lot of behind-the-scenes work to make this work. If it does go through, every public entity ambulance service will indeed be able to participate and benefit from this benefit.
Very good, Dana. Thank you for that great update, and good luck in your work. It's very important, obviously, and gap funding can be a huge saver of a local ambulance service financially because we know a lot of these services are operating below cost, as you mentioned, for Medicare and Medicaid. So thank you for the work that you're doing to look into that further. I wanted to make sure we asked Chris or Patrick if they had any questions of either Jerry or Dana, and if not, we'll transition into community paramedicine.
No questions for me, Joe.
No, everything sounds great.
Okay, very good. Well, we have Patrick Ryan on. Patrick's been leading an effort, as well as Jerry, for quite some time. Dana's been involved as well. So we have three individuals that have really taken some major initiatives to help address and bring forward community paramedicine. It looks like we're almost at the doorstep to introduce this at the state capitol in Madison. Patrick, can you offer an update, which I know you've done many times, but we're getting very, very close here.
Yeah, thanks, Joe. Some of the folks that you mentioned that have been working firsthand on this issue received a kind of what's thought of to be the final draft here before it gets introduced. Still have a little time for some feedback to Representative Amy Laudenbeck's office, but we think that this has gone through a number of different revisions and that it's comprehensive. It's going to both at this point in time, again, remember things can always change, but at this point in time, it's going to enable both community paramedic as well as community EMT. We've had numerous talks with various stakeholders throughout the state in all kinds of different allied health areas to get feedback, to get input, to be able to come up with a bill that we think will work for everyone. So the next steps will be to get this out, get co-sponsorships, and then the discussion will ensue. A hearing will be held, and then it will move forward. Hopefully, AB 59, which was the language update to many of the statutes that needed to take place first, did have a hearing. It's scheduled to be voted on in committee tomorrow, and tentatively scheduled to be on the floor next Tuesday. So that it was one of the kind of the first steps to really change some of the statute language to clear the way for this enabling legislation with some different verbiage and, really a different type of EMT that we didn't have before. So necessary steps that have to be part of the process, but we're feeling good about where things are at. So once this does get out for circulation, it's going to be important for anybody who has a stake in this to talk to local legislators so that we can build the necessary support to move it forward. With that, Jerry, I'd welcome any input you may have.
It's nice to be here. We have put in an ungodly amount of time into this and had some stronger opponents than I thought we were going to have going into it, but, we're here. Some concessions had to be made. So, when people read it, they just have to understand that there's something in there they don't like. We probably didn't like it either, but we had to concede to certain things because this is a bill for everybody. And I just can't say enough for Representative Laudenbeck's office, as well as all the other people supporting this legislation. It's been a ton of work for them. And it's nice to see that we can get to this point, and it's going to be worth it because all the people that are going to gain and have a better life because of this legislation don't even know it yet.
One final thought came to my mind. I know we've talked a number of times about reimbursement that is not part of the bill. Again, we were told early on in the previous session with our effort that if there was a fiscal note attached to it, it'd be very difficult to get it through. So we had a number of discussions internally about that. It's not ideal, but in my personal opinion, I think it's doable that we can get things up and running and get programs helping patients, gather the data, and then go back to whether it's DHS. I know there is a movement that I'm not involved in, but other states are on the federal level. So there's some time before that's going to happen, but the important thing is that we need to be able to allow services and staff members who are interested in getting a program up and off the ground are able to do so that we can then gather the information and really be able to demonstrate its effectiveness.
Patrick, just to clarify, too, an ambulance service can create a community paramedicine program at this time if they do contracting, for example, with their local hospital. The caveat with all this legislation is once the legislation is drafted, approved, and signed by the governor, then an entity can legally bill Medicare for services rendered. Is that correct? The difference between the two?
That is incorrect. There is no federal licensure, or I should say reimbursement that I'm aware of for community paramedicine. There will not be any enabling, at least in this go-around, for Medicaid as well. So any reimbursement, I know there's some programs that are kind of working in pilot phases that are have been providing some significant improvements in people's lives are working on grants, hospital foundations, I've heard. But any reimbursement is going to have to be, at least initially, from my perspective, is going to have to come from a healthcare agency, whether it's a hospital, health system, or something similar. But there is not, again, as I said, there's not Medicare or Medicaid reimbursement on the near horizon.
Okay, thanks for clarifying that too. That's a big thing to take note of, especially as an ambulance director or provider would be doing a budget analysis or forecasting. Those are serious considerations to make, especially when you involve training, resources, staff deployment, things like that.
But, Joe, this is Dana. That is correct that Medicare, Medicaid is not an avenue or resource yet, but I believe that this law is, or legislation sets it up to make it so that the hospital systems or any healthcare facility that you might be billing to view it as, oh, this is a legitimate entity. It's actually a community EMT, community paramedic, whatever that name is going to be for that practitioner, is that they can see that the state law supports the existence of that level, and it may make it easier when you're looking at contracting with your local health entities that they're going to see this. And I'm hopeful that in time to come that the federal levels will start looking at Wisconsin and Minnesota and California and all the other states that are implementing this, and they're going to go, oh, this is it's actually saving money, and it would behoove them to consider making payments from both Medicare and Medicaid. But that's down the line. That's not happening with this. But I'm just saying I think this sets it up to allow future talks at the federal level to potentially help to start paying for some of this services that we provide.
I think that's
a good
great
law
point, Dana.
All around. Yeah,
that's a real good point, Dana. It actually helps you build your business model. Unfortunately, it might be as time goes on, but at least you have the information that's being collected. There are services in Wisconsin delivering community paramedicine at this time, more or less as a reduction of 911 services, West Allis, North Shore, and other municipalities across the state. There's just a handful of them. Jerry and Dana, Chris, Patrick, anything else? We're close to our time here, but I wanted to make sure we covered any loose ends that maybe are out there or things that came up through our discussion.
I didn't know if you wanted to rip through some of that legislation from the study committee, if you just wanted to kind of theoretically talk
important about
any of it. Okay.
I think that's important, Jerry. Why don't you go ahead? Because I know there's several pieces of draft legislation the legislative council has approved that was brought up through the study committee.
Right. So a couple of the things, I'll go over the controversial ones, and then Dana can pipe in, of course, but I'm not going to get into any of the tax breaks or anything because, I mean, that is what it is. I mean, if the legislature can find the money to better compensate rural responders and volunteers, I mean, more power to them. And, you know, open up some new options for how to spend FAP money. That's great. I think, you know, some of the more controversial ones were the fact that they didn't want the legislation draft was to prevent fire chiefs and administrators, if you will, from allowing career EMS providers and firefighters to volunteer in other communities. And that went back and forth. A lot of it was on, you know, obviously management rights, employer rights, and, you know, the fact that there is quite a bit of presumptive legislation that exists, whereas if an EMS worker gets a communicable disease, it's assumed it occurred at their employer. And, and then other firefighter issues. And, you know, the more you share those employees, the more you increase the exposure potential, and it's always going to fall on the full-time provider unless it can be easily tracked back to, you know, some other place where they were working. Well, we know with communicable diseases and the incubation time that, you know, there's not always a clear exposure. And, you know, there were just concerns about the effects that that would have on employers. And how it died and why it died, I wasn't in the room, but the other issues are to increase the licensing period to 4 years. That passed, at least the study committee. So none of this is passed. This is just being introduced. And, you know, I think people just have to remember that there's statute and rule. And a lot of times statute passes and it's shipped over to EMS office and DHS to make the rules. And it's not always guaranteed that the rules that will be made will be what people necessarily intend the legislation will give them. Because it may be that people think, well, if we go to a four-year renewal, then that's 30 hours of education in 4 years. Well, it may not be that. It may be 60 hours of education in 4 years broken up into 15 hours a year. Well, then people wouldn't want that probably. So it's just, you know, we could actually tighten, things could get tightened up versus loosened up by some of this potential legislation when rules are made, because, you know, if people don't like how it's working right now, they may not like, you know, what the appropriate, what people find the appropriate rules to be to kind of enforce that legislation. And the other part would be the IV tech. So, you know, there's one of the pieces of legislation was to essentially, you know, kind of like how we used to have EMTD, we'd now have EMTIV. And this would, you know, in theory be the old IV tech as a credential or an endorsement, if you will, to EMT. And, you know, because of the increased hours that came along with aligning with the national curriculum and scope and everything, and essentially they didn't add any skills, but they added quite a few hours to AEMT, which would lead someone to believe that the hours of in the classroom education probably weren't enough initially for the amount of skills and medications that it opened up. So then there's a movement to kind of revert back to the intermediate or IV tech as an endorsement on EMT, and then the state would manage all of it. They would manage the testing, and, you know, we'd get back into the business of you know, doing, you know, tests again, which we were happy to get out of, I believe, as a state. But then it'd kind of create an end around to national registry. So you could still have an EMT who's kind of like an advanced EMT without having to take the national registry. But then the question is, what's the appropriate education for that new role? And it could be that you're just going to take the advanced EMT course, and then the state will administer the test, and you just won't take the national registry. So again, here's in theory, you know, something that, you know, may look good on paper, but then when you really get into the rules and the meat and potatoes of it, it really may just save you a national registry test and add a whole bunch of work to the EMS office. So I don't know. Dana?
Well, I am in agreement with what Jerry said on that particular one. The it's going to cost, if this were to pass where there would be an endorsement of IV tech level, not only would all those things occur that Jerry talked about, but there's a minimum of $90,000 of additional cost state level at DHS EMS office that would just that's just to help manage the test and getting everything appropriate and having the testing and skills and all that. So in addition to basically just bringing back an endorsement that would allow an EMT to start IVs, there is a fiscal note of about $90,000 that would be attached to that minimum. There's actually some other costs that we're finding that might make that go over $100,000. And quite frankly, I'd rather annually. That's not a one-time setup fee. That's every year it'll cost the state EMS office $90,000. I'm going to say $100,000 because I think there's other things we're missing, but about $100,000 a year annually to make this work. And quite frankly, I'd rather throw that into the FAP funding or put up some special grants for AEDs or EMRs or something to help with training and education in other areas. So though I respect many of my colleagues and coworkers that were on the legislative committee, so, you know, the majority of them did want to have this be considered in legislation. I did respectfully disagree with them, and I voted personally against sending this forward. And I know that's controversial, but the issue was just I did not see where the benefit of it compared to the costs, especially when we have some other options. We have, you know, the EMT, the AEMT levels where, hey, add in a few more hours at the training level and we'll probably be able to take care of that issue that people were having problems with passing the National Registry exam. Jerry, I forgot what the legislation was prior to the IV
tech. It was the, four-year renewal.
Yeah, that one was an interesting one because I specifically asked the committee, what is the intent? Are you trying to make it, right now basic has to do 30 hours in 2 years. So are we trying to make them do 30 hours in 4 years, or are you actually just going to double the amount of hours and make it 60 hours in 4 years? And nobody on the committee had an idea. They just said, well, we'll just pass the legislation and we'll let the EMS office figure it out in rulemaking. And I said, well, that doesn't help us out. Let's talk about what we're actually trying to do. What is our intent on this? And I would prefer, you know, saying whatever it's going to be, we're trying to do 60 hours in 4 years or 30 hours in 4 years, but that was not, none of that was spelled out in the current proposal. It was just to change the licensing period. And I have to tell you, in all the tests, I mean, we heard hours and hours and hours of testimony that's affecting volunteerism for both fire and EMS. And I don't remember hearing anybody saying that the two-year recertification cycle was a problem. That was not an issue on the retention side that I was aware of. There are other issues for the initial trying to bring somebody into your department, but as far on the recruitment side, but as far as retention, I don't remember any testimony that said having to renew my license for free every 2 years is inconvenience versus every 4 years. So that was again just one of those controversial legislative pieces. The rest of the pieces that had to do with tax credits of either 400 or 1,000 for volunteering, you know, obviously those are slam dunks and we want to support them. I think the fiscal note on both of them together is about $30 million a year. So if the state's willing to pick up that tab, that's fantastic. I would just ask that as people that are listening to this podcast and you know, if legislators call you up and say, is there really a problem? Please let them know what the real issues are. We've heard too many times where the legislators have called back and said, hey, you told us there was this issue and that this needed to get passed because of this and this. We called our constituents and they were like, no, everything's fine. There's no problems out there. So they were getting a mixed message. So I would ask that if you get contacted by legislators or have the opportunity to talk to them, please let them know that EMS and fire both are great public safety systems. We are strong, but we are starting to have some problems, and we need these. I think there were 7 initiatives that were pushed forward. We need to start considering what these initiatives are and trying to get tax credits and funding sources for fire and EMS across the state. So please show the support for that and let them know that we indeed need this to keep EMS and fire strong in Wisconsin for the upcoming years.
Thanks, Dana and Jerry. Those are excellent points. And it's important to note, too, this is a time for EMS. The last time there was a study committee dedicated to this topic was 20 years ago. It's been a considerable amount of time. EMS in that time, as we know, really hasn't changed much. But we're at the doorstep of an opportunity here to make some viable changes. And hopefully through these efforts, they will be realized. Thank you very much, both of you, for joining today's program. And Patrick, also the update on community paramedicine. We surely invite you back again at a future podcast.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
You know, we always have a moment before every single meeting of the board, not just the board meeting, but the whole, all the, every time we transition to a meeting for public comment, where people can come and address the board with anything that they would like considered, as well as, you know, they can always email issues, get things on the agenda. We want providers involved. We don't want to just be some board that, you know, people think is already preconceived and has, you know, their minds made up. We, the things that get on the agenda are things that are brought to us. And that's really important for the stakeholders in Wisconsin to know. We do want to hear from them. We do care, and they're always welcome to join the meeting and, you know, watch us work.
Excellent point, Jerry. And we'll be sure to promote the Skype option, too. That'll open up some opportunities for those that can't make the trip to Madison. Thanks for sharing with us. Patrick, did you have something you wanted to mention? I thought I heard your voice there.
No, nothing additional, Joe.
Nope. Okay. Maybe it was Chris. Did you?
No. I'm just enjoying the conversation. It was great information, and I hope that everyone listens that wasn't listening today downloads and takes the time to listen to the podcast.
We'll be sure to share it. Thank you very much, all of you. And several references were made to the recent Legislative Study Committee or the Joint Legislative Council. If you'd like information on the information Jerry and Dana highlighted, it is available by search on the PAW website at PAAW. Just search the Legislative Study Committee. We've written several pieces of information on that, as well as have information posted as to the votes and the legislation that is being suggested by the Joint Legislative Council to move forward to the full legislature. And we'll keep a close eye on this. It's a very interesting time for EMS. The next EMS Live program is Tuesday, March 14, starting at 9 a.m. March is actually National Kidney Awareness Month, and so one of our podcasts that month on the 14th will be dedicated to EMS care of the dialysis patient. Our guests include individuals with the National Kidney Association. EMS Live is streamed live via the phone and internet the second and fourth Tuesday every month. We surely thank you for your listenership today. Today's program was recorded and is available for download immediately at the PAW.us website. This is Joe Cavelli with the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin. On behalf of Chris Anderson and Patrick Ryan, thank you very much for listening to today's program. It was a pleasure to have you with us. Have a great day.
EMS Live is produced by the Professional Ambulance Association of Wisconsin, which is dedicated to healthy, sustainable ambulance and emergency medical services delivery in Wisconsin. Program comments can be emailed to emslive@paaw.us. That's emslive@paaw.us. Thank you for listening.